This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Mass transport data is some of the stickiest content out there for digital signage screens. It's information people tend to want and need, and they'll habitually look at screens to get it. Tapping into the open data from one transport authority to show it on screens is relatively easy. It gets more complicated when you want to show data from multiple systems on a screen, and it gets quite complicated when the signage network wants to run data specific to different cities and different transit systems. It'd be a bear for a software or solutions company to take on, which is the attraction of a Brooklyn-based service called Rotify, which aggregates all the data from different systems and presents it all in one structured format, using its platform and running off a subscription. The service is similar to some of the news, weather, and sports feed aggregators that have long operated in this sector, except the content is quite different. I spoke with founder and CEO Scott Kolber about the roots of Rotify and how his company's services are being used. Scott, can you tell me what Rotify is all about?
Sure. And hi, Dave, and thanks for inviting me to the podcast. Rotify is a data platform for transit and mobility information. So what does that mean? It means we have aggregated data from hundreds of mobility sources, trains, buses, ride share, car share, bike share, ferries, all manners of mobility services. We bring that all together in one place on one platform. So the digital signage operators have a single point of access for this information that they can use to turn into visual displays that people can see on screens in public places.
And if it wasn't aggregated, what would a digital signage operator or anybody else be up against?
They'd be up against a very messy, fragmented world of transit and mobility information, different formats, different levels of conformance, even among those who are using the same format, different levels of quality, constant updates, a mix of real-time data and scheduled data, and the need to constantly maintain that information. It's not such a big problem if you're just doing it for one location and from one source. But once you begin to scale, either in a single city or at a single location, that is scale across multiple modes of mobility, or if you're trying to scale geographically and deploy this information all over the place, you're essentially recreating what Rotify has already built.
Mm-hmm. So what happens? The XML schema that some, like the Cincinnati Transit Authority, they change it and then everything's messed up?
Well, a number of things happen. First of all, agencies don't keep their data up to date with the same level of consistency and quality as the others do. Sometimes data isn't available because somebody forgot to update a feed or because a device on a vehicle is broken. There are all sorts of things that happen, all sorts of points of failure along the line of the production line of how this information is produced. So managing the data also requires an understanding of what the data actually means and how it's produced and how different agencies operate. And that's not a business that we think digital signage operators want to be in. They want to be able to focus on what they're doing, and they just want to be able to know that they can get a reliable feed easily provided at a reasonable cost, so the information is always available. They don't want to replicate what we've already done.
So the business model then is, I'm a digital signage solutions provider. I work with a particular software platform, and I'm doing something that's going to cut across numerous transportation authorities of some kind or another that I want to use the data from. I would subscribe to your service because I'm going to get one harmonized feed that I don't have to spend a whole bunch of time sorting out or worrying about. It'll just kind of plug in and work.
Exactly. Now, you know, the simple description is you integrate with our API once, mm-hmm. and you can use that all over the place. Otherwise, you could be integrating with hundreds and hundreds of APIs and then having to deal with those on a constant basis. And the business model, so that's sort of the operational model. That's the service model. The business model is signage solutions providers. And I'm using that term very, very broadly because, you know, there are a lot of different types of folks providing different types of services within that space. But let's call them solutions providers. They pay us a subscription fee for the use of our API based on the number of screens where the information that we're making available to them is actually mm-hmm. deployed. And I say that very precisely because we're not licensing the data. It's not our data to license. We're just providing a tool that makes it easy to access this information.
Right. And most of the data that you're harvesting, so to speak, and integrating is open source data, correct?
Exactly. It's open data. And this is really a key point. Whether it's coming from private sources or public agencies, it's open data. We are not producing the data. We're not in the manufacturing business. We're in the make it easy to get at business.
So there's a bit of a corollary between what a company like Datacall down in Texas does, except they're getting like weather and news feeds and that sort of thing, harmonizing it into one structured format. They're worrying about the licensing from Associated Press and so on, which you don't have to worry about. But essentially, it's the same kind of idea that you're paying one provider to give you all of this stuff in an organized format that you don't have to worry about on a day-to-day basis. It should just work.
Exactly. We're an aggregator. I mean, I hate to reduce it, you know, to one word, but, you know, that is essentially what we are. We mm-hmm. are an aggregator. And then other aggregators, DigiChief is a good example of one. They use our data along with mm-hmm. other types of content that they have, news, weather, sports, and so on, to provide that kind of information to their customers.
How often does this stuff change?
Well, you know, every minute.
No, so yeah, I'm sorry. I knew as soon as I asked that, I asked it the wrong way. I don't mean how often does the data change from a transit system, but how often does a transit system change the way that they present the data?
There are some transit agencies that update their feeds every day, including their schedule feeds. I mean, obviously, with real-time data, you know, the data is constantly changing because, you know, vehicles are moving. You wouldn't necessarily think that schedules get changed. And for the most part, you know, the entire schedule doesn't change. You know, most agencies update those schedules maybe monthly or quarterly. But there are agencies that are, you know, just constantly tweaking their schedules. So one route may change, you know, from one day to the next, another one might change. And we get those updates every day, and they have to be managed.
Oh, so it doesn't come in the same structure as the other ones? Or I guess what I'm really wondering is, how much of a beast is it to stay on top of this stuff? Are they changing the way, or are they forcing you and your guys to constantly tweak the way you present the data to your subscribers? Because they've done it a little bit differently, and it's an ever moving target.
No, I see what you mean. In other words, you're asking does the format change?
Or yeah. How hard is this?
The formats are fairly stable. I mean, once an agency has a format in place, you know, that's the format that they're using, mm-hmm. and the dominant format for schedule information is a format called GTFS, which used to stand for Google Feed Transit Spec. Now it stands for General Transit Feed Spec. It's kind of an open standard now. So most agencies publish their data, their schedule data, in the GTFS format, but they're not consistent in the way they use that format. They're different fields, and we see, you know, variation from one agency to the next in, you know, for example, what direction is a bus going in and how the codes are used for that. You know, if you think about it, sometimes buses go north, south, other buses are inbound, outbound, others are east, west, others operate in a circular way. And there's a, you know, there's a parameter for that in the feed but agencies use them a bit differently. Just to give you an example of, kind of some of the in the weeds stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. But I would say that agencies, once they've set up the feeds, they're using it fairly consistently within their own use of the feed. What does happen, though, is that they change the information itself at different at different intervals. As I was saying before, some of them could be one day, some of them could be quarterly. And you need to know when that's happened so you can update the feed so that our customers and our partners have the most current information.
Mm-hmm. Are you also using real-time data?
Yes. Yeah. And real-time data is becoming a pretty big factor as the cost of producing that data has come down and as riders are expecting it. And when you think about real-time data, real-time data means obviously real-time, when will the bus be here, being able to, stand at a street corner and reliably predict that. But bike share data is also real-time data. 5 minutes ago, there were 6 bikes at the nearby bike stand. Now there are only 2. That's right. Real-time data as well. And Uber, Lyft, that's also real-time data.
Are any of these agencies or for-profit companies like an Uber or Lyft or the bike share guys, are they turning around to you and saying, actually, no, this isn't open data. We want to sell you this?
Nobody has tried to sell it to us. We are seeing some resistance on the part of some of the newer on-demand forms of mobility, bike share, dockless bike share, for example, and some of the scooter companies. They are resistant to making the data available.
Is that because of competition?
Well, I don't want to speak for them, but I think they feel a sense of, everything is about competition in a certain sense.
Sure.
Right. So, and I think what they may be uncomfortable with is the idea that a third-party aggregator could be in some way sort of arbitraging their data, creating algorithms that, for example, that, let people know what's the cheapest way to get from point A to point B, or providing a direct head-to-head cost comparison. If you go, if you take this service, here's what it's going to cost you. If you use this other service, that's what it's going to cost you. I mean, look, it's all business. what Rotify is focused on is not trying to, pit different types of services against each other. We're just trying to make it easier for people to know what's going on.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm just curious. I have a sense of how this is presented, but I'd love for you to just describe how are companies using this and what's the end product? What are consumers seeing?
The sort of pure version of it, Dave, is a screen that shows people everything that's going on around them right now. So, let's think about a use case. You're walking out of a stadium or a concert hall after a game or after a show, and you're trying to make decisions. Should we get a beer? Should we rush home? Should we go to the gift shop? What should we do? Or we've got to get home. When are the next few trains leaving? And so you just look up as you're walking, as you're riding down the escalator, or you're walking through the concourse, and you see that information in front of you. It's just all up there on the screen. And if it's well designed, you can take in that information. You can find the specific pieces of information that you're looking for. And you can see that within, under 10 seconds. You can see it quickly, you can absorb it, and you can make a decision. Or you can just be reassured that what's supposed to be happening is, in fact, what is happening. In other words, are the trains running on time? Are they running, with the right frequency that
expect? And you don't present the final format. You're not selling a template or a module that says, here's how it all works. Here's the Pittsburgh trains or whatever. You're selling the data, and then it's up to the network operator to take that data and present it in the way that best suits their audience.
Yes, that's exactly right. Although I would describe that a little bit differently. It isn't so much that it's up to them, although obviously it is up to them, but rather that we give them the ability to fully customize the look and feel of the end user displays so that, you know, that conforms to a certain branding sensibility or some, you know, kind of feeling of location, or so that it can be playlisted either in time or alongside other types of content. In other words, we're not imposing a fixed format display on an end user or the end customer.
Right.
You know, we're giving them total flexibility. So we're really focusing on solving a very specific problem, which is, you know, making it easy to get at the data in a consistent format. So it's right. Then easy to use.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I would imagine the first pass at this is what you're describing, that it's the public transit version of arrivals and departure screens at airports. But is the next level of this using the data for conditional content, where maybe you never actually show the data, the numbers, but that data is influencing what's showing up on the screen?
You mean to...
If this happens, then show this.
Right, right. Like if the train is delayed, if this particular route is delayed for 20 minutes, or if the next arrival is not going to be here for 20 minutes, show an ad for the local coffee shop or something.
Ad or messaging or like alternate routes or God knows what.
Yeah, no, I, you know, absolutely. It could be used in that way for sure. And that's another benefit of having access, easy access to the data. It's not just about showing the data itself, but about using the data in a way that could determine, you know, the exhibition of other types of content.
So how is it being used right now? Is it transit authorities who are working with digital signage companies and then presenting their data on screens, or what are what's the sort of range of use cases that you're seeing among your customers?
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly, we're not actually working directly with transit agencies as end users as mm-hmm. much as we are, you know, through our partners working with real estate management companies.
Okay.
Business improvement districts, chambers of commerce, economic development boards in downtown areas, stadiums, potentially retailers, hospitals, schools, et cetera, corporations, you know, that want to make this information available directly, you know, to their employees. Because, you know, these venues are along transit routes. People everywhere need to get somewhere. And in cities, yeah, you know, what is the number? Like 70% of the world lives along some kind of public transit route. And what we're seeing is that all these new forms of mobility are really changing the way people, you know, where people live, how they get around town, where they choose to work. And there are so many more different kinds of mobility options today than there were just a couple of years ago. You know, when you think about new light rail systems, and when you think about bike share systems, and when you think about scooters, or new forms of rideshare companies like Chariot and Via, et cetera, which are on-demand ride services, Car2Go, Reach, et cetera. And that's all happened very recently. And it really affects the way people think about, you know, their own personal behavior. So they want to see this information in one place.
So I would imagine some people are listening to this saying, well, this is all very nice, but why wouldn't I just use my smartphone for all these things?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I hear that question a lot. And it's a fair question. The answer is it's all very use case driven. You know, first of all, I would say nobody actually wants to look up this information on their phone, if they could just look up when they need it or when they want it and just see it sort of magically appear in front of them, right? There are digital screens all over the place. And people who are operating or own those screens want people to look at those screens because there's other information, other content, other messaging on those screens that you know, they want people to see. So, you know, what we say is give people information that they're really looking for, you know, properly placed, and they'll also look at the information that you want them to see. But there are some other very practical considerations. For example, if you're coming out of a game where you've been tweeting and Facebook posting and shooting video, you know, this could be a game or a concert or something like that. You know, your battery is down to 2%. You're making calls maybe to, or texting to get in touch with your friends. Where are we going to meet? What are we going to do next? If you can be doing that and look up as you're going down the escalator and see this information, that's a much better user experience. There isn't a signal everywhere, or there isn't necessarily a reliable carrier signal everywhere where somebody might want this information. Many of the people who are most dependent on public transportation, I would imagine, are people that don't have unlimited data plans. So they would rather see the information in front of them, maybe in a storefront window, than have to use precious data and risk going over their data plan, you know, to find out when the bus is coming. So it's there, and it's cold, or it's raining, or it's snowing.
Or it's very sunny and you can't see the damn screen.
You can't, exactly. So, you know, there are some situations where it makes sense to use your personal device, and there are others where it's just easier to look up and there it is.
Yeah, I mean, smartphones are amazing. They can do all these things, but I think people sometimes look past the fact that they can be a pain in the ass, particularly if you have multiple pieces of information that you need to get. And you've got to find all of it. You've got to squint at your screen, aggregate it all together. If there's just a dashboard that tells me the key information that I need to know on a screen right in front of me, like that's where I'm going.
Yeah. I say, okay, in some subway systems, for example, have screens on the platform. Mm-hmm. And I ask people, did you ever take your phone out when you went down to the platform to find out when the train was coming? If there was a screen on the platform that told you when the train is coming, I would say nobody in the history of the world has ever done that. Why would they do that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the best content that you see down in a train platform is the thing that says next train 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to look up and see that and then say, oh, I think I want to take my phone out because I enjoy taking my phone out and seeing the same information on my phone.
So where did this come from? Where did Rotify come from?
Well, there's a bit of a history to the company. We started out as a way of crowdsourcing this information, and then agencies started making it available openly, and we created a couple of apps. And there is still a Rotify mobile app. But we realized, just in terms of what our own capabilities were and where we saw a real marketplace opportunity, that, you know, we felt people wanted to see this information in public and that there were reasons why it wasn't being made available there and that we could solve that problem. In other words, the data platform that we had built to power our own mobile application could be used to be the source for many other points of exhibition. And that maybe long term, you know, that was a more, you know, sort of stable business model.
And when you started the company, this is a bootstrap company with the idea of crowdsourcing transit data. That was the business model?
Well, the very, very first business model was crowdsourcing parking spaces, open parking spaces on the street in Brooklyn, New York, which is where we got started. I didn't actually start the company, but I became involved in it.
Then you realize that crowdsourcing would just say it's zero all the time?
Well, crowdsourcing for parking via text, which is what it originally started as, was not really a viable business model for a whole bunch of reasons. But the timing was right. And it was at the point when transit agencies were beginning to make their data available. You know, open data really began to mean something. Cities began to require, you know, they passed laws that said that public data needed to be actually made public. Mm-hmm. So that the kind of timing was right to ride that open data wave. And I think where we're at now is kind of a later phase of that. It's not so much about the open data, but about the proliferation of mobility sources.
And by mobility sources, you mean?
Some people call it micro-mobility, so bike share, scooters, on-demand ride-share services, whether they're sort of national services or local services. Just the realization that there are a lot of ways to get around, and there's a real craving for that information. Plus, also, I would say the growth of the digital, the growth and growing sophistication of the digital signage industry, which is still a very fragmented business.
Just a bit.
Yeah. But I think where Rotify has an opportunity and an advantage is that we have tremendous geographic scale and the ability to cover an entire content sector, which will allow us to, be the go-to source for this type of content wherever there's a screen. And that's ultimately our goal.
I would imagine with the way sensors are evolving and the way analytics are evolving, that you're really just at the start of what can be done with this. And I think about things like commuter rail trains and trains after things like concerts and football games and so on, where I have stood and waited for a train and kind of fought my way into the car and then heard somebody on the PA system saying, there's another train right behind. If you just wait 2 minutes, you can get on that one and it won't be as crowded and so on. And you would think with sensors, you're going to start to be able to have data that will tell you the occupancy loads of different trains and so on to help make those decisions.
And those services are actually out there and available. But with real-time data that transit agencies are using, subway systems, for example, the real benefit of that, it's not so much about rider information, but rather about being able to know precisely where the trains are. Because if you know precisely where the trains are, then you can run them more closely together, which means you can provide better service. Mm-hmm. And if you know where the trains are and you're running them more closely together, when the conductor says, there's another one right behind us, that will actually be true as opposed to just a way to, kind of placate passengers, get them to stop blocking the doors. If, in fact, there is another train right behind us and people can look up and see that on a screen somewhere or even see it on their phone and have a reasonable degree of confidence that that information is correct, then that's a better rider experience and you won't be jammed into a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you live in New York. I've been in New York and I've looked at platforms sometimes and thought, oh, I really don't want to get in here and stand under somebody's armpit or whatever.
Well, right. And that's an experience that people have. I mean, everybody sort of goes to New York or, San Francisco as an example of, well, this is where it's really needed. But this is true all over the place. And, there's a lot of renewed investment in public transportation. I mean, you can see in Denver, for example, how, the RTD has really transformed the way people live in and around Denver. I mean, I know people there who have given up their second car because they can now commute from one end of the city to the other on the light rail system. And when you look at the demographics, 50% of the workforce will soon be millennials who have driver's licenses at a much lower rate than the rest of the population. I think the number of driver's licenses issued to 18 to 24-year-olds has dropped something like 15% in the last decade. In a certain sense, having this information available becomes a sort of a human resources and recruiting issue and a sort of branding issue for corporations. Because, the talent that companies are trying to hire are people who care about transportation and mobility, and they want those choices to be easy They want the information to be readily available, and they want to see that it's important to companies that they're considering working for that they demonstrate, you know, that those companies, you know, demonstrate that this is a corporate value. So, you know, we hear about companies that want to have this information, you know, on screens in their lobby. So when employees leave at the end of the day, you know, they can see what's going on. Or when new recruits come in for an interview, they see, ah, you know, this is a smart company and a smart building, and they care about what I care about.
Hmm. So what does the next 12 months look like for your company?
Well, we're really very focused on scaling. You know, our distribution model is to work with, as we said, signage services companies, signage solution providers, and we have partnerships with, among others, you know, TouchSource, Orange Barrel Media, Four Winds, DigiChief, other companies like this, and mm-hmm. so on. And we're Captivate is another example. And so we're working with them to help them tell the story to their end customers about, you know, why it's useful to have this information. So what we really want to do is, you know, scale the deployment of this information through those partnerships.
Right. And they would find you at Rotify.com?
At Rotify.com. And I'm at Scott@Rotify.com. I'm easy to find. And what, you know, one of the things that we do and we pride ourselves in doing is, you know, we get a lot of over the transom requests and, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty good at, you know, getting our partners involved in those opportunities because we're not trying to provide the entire solution. You know, we don't do the screens, we don't do network right. management. You know, we're just focused on the data. And when we get inquiries, we get them typically from companies that, you know, want the full solution. So we actually become a sort of lead generation source mm-hmm. for our distribution partners.
It's your stuff that solves the problem, but that somebody else has to figure out how to actually execute on that problem.
Right. And, you know, transit and mobility is a conversation starter. It's something that people really understand. And so it sort of transforms the conversation about digital signage from, you know, pixels and, you know, the width of the screen or the sort of technical feature oriented conversations into one of, here's what people are going to look at. You know, here's the content, here's the experience that you can provide. Mm-hmm. And it's a universal need, right? Everybody wants to know, everybody's going somewhere at some point and yeah. they want to know what's going on. And that's the problem we solve.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.